Thanks for being with us today, listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this Friday. At the 40 years milestone, celebration has snowballed into a gathering that started out with a few hundred people and now draws more than 2,000 dancers and thousands more to Juno every 2 years. The name itself describes what celebration is all about for the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people who gather here every 2 years. On Saturday, a documentary will premiere at Centennial Hall, also part of the live celebration broadcast here on KTOO 360 TV. And we'll tell you all about that later in the show. But we want to learn more about this project, co-produced by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Farthest North Films. Sarah Betcher is here from Farthest North Films, and she joins us now to tell us more about this documentary, 40 Years of Celebration. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Wow, what a monumental project, really. I actually got to see a little sneak preview clip that was just exciting for those of us who've lived in Juneau for a long time, even myself, not a member of the Native community here, but someone who just recognized so many friends, so many familiar faces, people I didn't maybe even know personally, elders who've passed through the many years. The thing that's amazing about Celebration is that it started in 1982 and has really been documented from the start. Is that right?
That's right, right from the start. And actually, KTO TV has been documenting it, and especially filming the main stage performances. And I think KTOO has done a great job in doing that. And I had noticed there wasn't really a documentary about it for a very long time. And I just was so impressed by Celebration, and every time I'd see a dance performance, just get chills all over my spine. Like, wow, this is a really powerful event, and I'd love to learn more about what Celebration means to people.
It's so interesting that when you think about Celebration, it's actually, I mean, it's a fairly new phenomena. It started in 1982. This isn't something that is sort of mimicking or trying to recreate something that happened in the past. It's important in that it's the first of its kind, in a way, a gathering of people from across Southeast Alaska.
That's right. And so kind of before 1982, it wasn't actually legal to celebrate the cultures in the way that they are at Celebration. And so that wasn't that long ago.
People really talk about having to hide their culture, hide these celebrations, hide dancing, hide traditional artwork. That was a shameful part of our history in this state, something that's important to acknowledge, and it's important to know that it wasn't always this way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in the film, Rosita, she's more or less the narrator in it. She talks about that.
This is Rosita Worrell.
Rosita Worrell talks a lot in the film, and how she wasn't able to celebrate her culture before that. And so another reference in the film is that for the Tlingit, Tsimshian, and Haida, it was the first time that all those tribes had come together and were able to publicly celebrate their cultures.
It's an amazing – it is an incredible thing to think about, that was something that – I mean, I think it's something we all know as those of us who live in Alaska, who care about the history of Alaska. We all know that we've gone through a period where Native cultures were really to be discouraged, and, you know, that was what was happening in schools, language, all of that. But it's sort of easy to forget, because we see so much great pride, so much great, amazing, natural Native history happening, totems being raised, all, you know, Sea Alaska Plaza, things around us are gathering momentum at all times. But it's important to recognize we're in this really key moment in history, and it's a reaction in some ways to this really terrible time in history.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I was really impressed by is knowing a little bit about how when Celebration started, it was mostly dance performances. But over the 40 years, it has grown to showcase so much more.
It is amazing. That. It's a festival of so much. You know, we actually have a clip. Now, how many interviews did you end up doing for this?
So I did the interviews in 2018, and I did 20 – maybe slightly more than 20 interviews, ranging from 10 minutes to Rosita Worrell's interview was the longest at over an hour. And so I transcribed all those interviews first, as I do for documentary films, and that's what I make, documentaries. And then I went from there and then kind of chose the chapters. There's various chapters in the film, different themes, highlighting what Celebration showcases in the different ways, whether it's showcasing art or, you know, special events like the Native Fashion Show.
It also seems like there's a lot of historic interviews that you were able to tap into as well.
I was. Over the last several years, Sea Alaska Heritage has digitized some of the older footage. And so I was able to access that and actually put that into the film and listen to some of the stage performances first and in conjunction with the interviews I did in 2018 to pull that in to show the changes over the years. And with those, to show who's showing up at Celebration, who's performing. Starting at a much older older dancers now to a more age diverse.
That is a really interesting part of it, the small part of it I was able to watch. How that was pointed out, and I think Rosita actually pointed that out in her interview. But how the original ones, it's amazing to see the footage from the 80s. But it is mostly elders. It really is a large proportion of the dancers and the people participating are elders. And that is really not the scene now. I mean, the elders are represented, but it is so diverse age-wise. It's really exciting, really an exciting thing to see that has changed that much.
It has. And it's really, I've seen Native dances all over the place. And it's the only place that I've seen where people have their babies, you know, strapped to them. There's little toddlers out there dancing, participating on the stage. And I'm just so touched by that. And you can see these little kids or babies watching the older kids and older adults and following and mimicking their movements. And I just think that's so great to get the kids dancing right off the bat.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's an inclusive, really cool thing to see. Well, let's just listen to a quick clip here. We've got about a 2-minute audio clip here, and maybe we'll just talk about what we hear afterwards. This is something Rhonda McBride put together for us from your documentary.
We had come through open periods of suppression of our language and our culture. Back in the 1980s, our culture was not something that everybody saw. You had to be Tlingit or Haida or Tsimshian to know about our ceremonial activities. I grew up in a time period where we would have our ceremonies and we would have to hide them, pretend we weren't doing that. So it was a real milestone in the 80s that we were able to bring our culture out into the open.
The Heritage Foundation is only about a year old.
And it was Judson Brown, who was the chair of Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation, that came up with the idea that we should have a celebration.
For the first time ever in our longhouse, we have the three nations under one roof. I believe this is one of the most historic occasions for our three designated tribes.
And then, of course, we've had David Katzik. He got Celebration off on its feet, stabilizing and making sure that Celebration got off to the right start.
It will send a message to our present generation of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people that we can preserve our culture, we can preserve our language.
Our first celebration, it was celebrating that we had survived.
These 3 days, for those of us who are not elders, and for those of us who do not speak nor understand as fully as we might, our culture, our heritage, will likely be one of the three most significant days of our lives.
That's Byron Malott speaking there, last speaker. And Rosita Wuerl was really the person kind of narrating, as you said. And Rosita Wuerl is the president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. It feels like the tip of the iceberg there, right? I mean, that is that part there is sort of in the kind of the introduction of the film. So when you decided, okay, I'm going to go through 40 years of history of the celebration, what were some of the themes that came out to the forefront?
Yeah, the first roughly 4 minutes of the film go and speak to the history, how it got started and why it got started, what the inspiration was and what was happening before that, you know, as far as not being allowed to publicly show and celebrate culture. And then it actually more highlights what is going on with celebration today, and especially at that year 2018. And so we look at the affiliated events like the canoe arrivals. And then there's a chapter just focusing on music and dance, what we see from there, the youth involvement and the different groups that are just youth. There's a chapter speaking about oratory skills and language. And we do have – I did put some caption sections in the film where people are speaking Tlingit, and actually some historical – oratory sections where people are speaking very beautifully, and we actually caption those sections. And then regalia, there's a section on the Native Fashion Show showcasing 2016, which was the first year, and 2018, and the toddler regalia review, the art contest, you know, and the traditional food contests, all the different ways and things that you get to experience at celebration beyond just the dance events.
And now, of course, this whole new chapter with the Sealaska Heritage Foundation opening this beautiful new plaza, this area for people to gather and for the foods and arts and crafts and all kinds of things to be displayed, plus the interior of that, which is workshops and I mean, there's an amazing new growth that's happening even today.
There is. And so, you know, we could make a documentary every year because there are things that aren't done every year. You know, I was noticing that a couple years back there was a comedy show, but I don't think we had a comedy show in 2018. And we're not having the Native Fashion Show this year, but we did for 2 years. And so there's always new things being added. And I think it's great that the organization is open to, you know, suggestions and adding new things and kind of playing along with what's going on at that time.
Yeah. Have you seen other trends happen? Were there other things that used to be a cornerstone or used to be a big part that kind of don't happen as much, or have things kind of gone through waves in that way?
What I've noticed in reviewing the footage, the older footage, and the more recent, you know, especially in 2018. And I used a lot of KTOO's footage for the documentary because they were recording the main stage and I was more getting behind the scenes, is that there was a lot of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian language spoken by the younger generation. And even if people weren't fluent, they were speaking what they knew, and they had, you know, and some of the dance groups were actually speaking entirely in their language. And what has maintained the same is that the songs are sung in Tlingit, Haida, or Tsimshian. They're not sang in English. But the difference that I have seen is, again, yeah, the younger generation speaking their language and really getting inspired to learn, because all three of those languages are endangered. So it's really heartwarming to see that that the youth realize that the languages are endangered. And if they don't start learning the language, that it could die in the near future. So
that's incredibly encouraging, actually, to hear that, because I think that I'm based in Juneau, so I know of Tlingit. And I think that Tlingit really felt like it was on the brink a number of years ago. And but I know people who are really taken up the charge of wanting to make sure that that doesn't go away. Paul Marx is a friend of mine, and other people, you know, like I know all these, I know a lot of people that are really, you know, they've really taken that up. And there's a place where that's now accepted and encouraged and funded and those kinds of things. It's interesting tell me a little bit about the relationship between celebration and Sealaska itself, and how do they kind of sponsor it? How do they make it happen?
Well, they do the groundwork to host Celebration, and it's a lot of work. Basically, as soon as one Celebration ends, they're already starting to plan, you know, what the theme is going to be, who the lead dance group is going to be, finding volunteers beyond just SHI staff, and then also getting funding, because Celebration is an expensive event to put on. So Sea Alaska actually funds a lot of Celebration. But it also brings a lot of money into the community, because you have thousands of people coming to Juneau and booking all the hotels and Airbnbs and going to restaurants. But yeah, there's a lot of work. And then what the documentary also talks about is within each village, each dance group, they are also planning ahead right after Celebration. They are making new regalia, you know, especially for the kids, making new stuff, and then practicing their dances, coming up. And some of the groups especially like to come up with new dances, some of them every year. And so on all sides, you know, planning ahead for a big event, because as we know, Southeast Alaska is divided in these communities where you have to fly or take ferries to get here. So it's a bit complicated.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just drive down the road to get to Celebration.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's we're in a part of the world where it's, yeah, we're not connected by road. So so taking a road trip to Celebration is going to involve a couple of different modes of transportation, no matter what you do.
That's yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, fascinating stuff. So, you know, one thing that's interesting that you mentioned a part of is that there's this. I mean, this is a full disclosure. KTOO has been a part of Celebration as well since its inception, and I think that was. I guess there must have always been an eye to really making, you know, sort of making sure this was documenting this, not just broadcasting it and showing it while it was happening, but knowing that these were going to be historical documents in a way. Is that how those documents have been preserved? And when it comes to doing a research project like this, which this is part of, I would hope that a lot of the groundwork on categorizing and things like that might have been done.
Yeah, exactly. The nice thing about that these performances were video documented is that, like what I did in my interviews, I transcribed all of those things, and so now we have this piece. There's a documentary that's premiering tomorrow, and then also all the transcriptions for the interviews. And so we have documentation of that that can be researched in the future. And a lot of my documentaries end up snowballing into other things because there's so much rich information there. And a lot of the interviews I did, people have been part of Celebration since the beginning. And so they had a lot of information to share about the changes that they've seen, and in all different ways, because people are involved in different ways, whether they're an artist or they're a dancer or they're part of the native food contests and things like that. And so it's incredibly valuable, and that will be preserved, you know, on hard drives. And then SHI, if anyone hasn't checked out their YouTube channel, it's very extensive, especially over this COVID segment. They have put up a massive amount of films, and they're going to continue to archive the older footage of Celebration that KTOO, like you said, has been recording since the beginning. And so those are easily accessible, and anyone who wants to do research and, you know, write something up about that, you can listen to that and write an article or things like that. So
that's an amazing tool of connection, isn't it, that we kind of take for granted, I guess, nowadays. But the idea that, you know, in 1982, broadcasting it was really a revelation and an amazing thing to be able to do to different communities and across the state. It probably went out on RatNet. You know, I don't know if you remember, old RatNet was the old statewide system that went out to all the villages, and you know, they were always looking for something to play, so they would play you know, documentary footage that might be like what they did for Celebration. But then from there, going to these, you know, kind of categorized ways of being able to view things on YouTube, so you can just kind of really zero in on the year you're interested in or what you're interested in and go right there.
Yeah, and the other thing that YouTube has done, I think somewhat recently, is now you can input chapter sections. And so once that is up, I believe SHI will be putting this up on their YouTube channel eventually. And what you'll be able to do is, if you're interested in a particular chapter, is just click on the time code below the video and go to that chapter. So again, that's really great for classrooms. If people have a luncheon and they're doing, they don't have – the film is 54 minutes or 64 minutes actually. And so if you don't have that whole time frame, you can look at particular chapters. And that's a great thing too.
Was there an idea about the outlet for this film when you were making it? You know, often you might think about, you know, if it's going to play as a half hour thing on television or that kind of, but maybe television, broadcast television, isn't as important of a role anymore when you're producing these kinds of documentaries.
You know, that wasn't even discussed in the beginning. When I proposed the idea to Rosita in about 2016 or 2017, one of those years, and she said yes to the idea within 20 minutes of meeting with her. And the idea was that I would document it in 2018 and then get the film ready to be showcased at the 40th anniversary, which is this year. And really that was the only plan that we talked about, was showing the film at Celebration at its 40th anniversary. But then what happens with almost all of my film projects is that we come up with other ideas. Oh, maybe we should make it available on thumb drives. Maybe people can buy those. Maybe we should put it on YouTube, submit it to film festivals. Oh, what about these? And we're still talking about those other plans, but SHI will have the say in where it goes and all that kind of stuff. And we'll just continue to talk about it and see where we want to send it.
Yeah, yeah. And technology moves along too, you know. So a thumb drive wasn't something that was even very feasible with a film 10 years ago. You know, today it's completely feasible. You know,
that's
it,
right.
It will fit on there, yeah.
And until recently, I've still been making DVDs. And if I make a film out of a village in the north, I still do produce DVDs because the bandwidth there is not very great in the north. So I did produce a DVD recently from a new film. So it kind of depends on where people live, what is the most useful for them. And then if they're outreach educators, how are they able to show it at schools or in a gym and things like that? Can they use YouTube or do they need the physical copy? So I really am inspired to make my films as accessible as possible so that they can be seen by lots and lots of people. So I think it's great that SHI puts so many of their videos on their YouTube channel.
Yeah. Speaking of that accessibility to it, how can people view it, and how can that happen?
Well, the first viewing, the premiere, is tomorrow at 4 p.m. in Centennial Hall. So that is an admission based showing in there. But if anyone's part of Celebration or you do want to see the film, you can get an entry fee and go to Centennial Hall at 4 p.m. tomorrow.
Yeah, great. It'll be really exciting. I'm sure people – well, it'll be, I'm sure, an emotional thing for a lot of people to see. Just there's so many people that are not with us anymore that are part of this. And then even, as you mentioned, the toddlers in 1982 are 40-year-old, are 40-year-old people today. So, it really documents the life of a lot of people in Southeast Alaska.
It does. And actually – I did about 20 interviews in 2018. A few of those people have passed since then. And I think I always think everything happens for a reason, that I was able to snag that interview, just in time to showcase that in this film. And then of certainly the historic footage. And so I hear from people all the time. They love being able to see Celebration on TV. They love being able to see it on YouTube and that kind of thing, because we see people we know on that, and that's really meaningful. And like you said, the toddlers in 1982 are now 40 years old.
It's amazing. So. Mm-hmm. A good friend of mine, Brian Wallace, is a really good friend of mine. I know he was interviewed in your film as well, but he's always taken such pride in documenting Celebration as a cornerstone of the work that he does. And, I've gotten the chance to look at a lot of his photographs through the years. And, That's an amazing documentation as well. Is there also other – there's video, there's photography. Have there been other works of documenting celebration? Have there been other books or other ways of that people have gone through and documented this unique event?
Yeah, I'm not sure of all the ways in which celebration has been documented, but I will mention that there's a brand new children's book that's out there written by Lily Hope, and I can't wait to read through it all. But that just came out. That was just published, and she was signing for those, I think, yesterday, and they're in the store of Centennial Hall. I saw them today. So there's that, and I'm not familiar with who all has written things up
yeah.
and things like that.
It just makes me think that your job is to sort of act as a and work as a documentarian. You're documenting, you're dealing with facts, but there's also these people that are celebration also provides a point of inspiration for creative work as well. And it's really fun to hear that Lily has done a children's book, and I'm sure there's other points of inspiration for this gathering as well. Well, thanks so much. That's a monumental amount of work. As you say, since 2016, you've been working off and on this. I'm sure the pandemic must have – did that help the editing process in a way? Did you really get to concentrate or
– I did. And coincidentally, normally I make film shorts, but and I've made probably over 70 film shorts. But the last three films I've made – were all feature-length films. So coincidentally, when COVID hit,
right.
all of those were already lined up. So I've been doing a massive amount of editing during the pandemic.
Well, that's cool. Well, at least something positive has come out of this
exactly.
all. Well, thank you so much. That's Sarah Betcher with Farthest North Films. Where are you based out of?
I lived in Alaska 15 years, but I'm currently living down in Hawaii right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, 49th state. That's fine.
Yeah.
4950. We got a connection there. Well, thank you so much. Again, the documentary is premiering tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock at Centennial Hall, 40 years of celebration, and you're invited to go watch it. You have to get into celebration to do it, but obviously anyone who's attending celebration already, or if you're interested in seeing this really amazing work of documenting the 40 years of celebration, go check it out. Sarah Betcher from Farthest North Films. Thanks so much.